Liberty greetings and happy Friday to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
Let's kick off with the quarterfinals of the 31st Africa Cup of Nations football tournament in Gabon. There will be two quarterfinal matches on Saturday and two more on Sunday. Joining us now with a preview is reporter Samson Omale.
On Saturday in Libreville, it will be Burkina Faso who will face Tunisia in the first game. Patrick Malo, Burkina Faso defender, says they've got their eyes beyond the quarterfinals.
Our goal is not the quarterfinals, our goal is the final.
Senegal and Cameroon will fight for a place in the semis in the other game in Franceville on Saturday, a remake of the 2012 final. Despite being dubbed favorite for the title, Aliou Cissé, the Senegal coach, is playing down their chances.
Cameroon have to be the favourites. Senegal have never won the AFCON. How many have Cameroon won? Four? So you see the favourites have to be Cameroon.
And then on Sunday, January 29th in Oyem, it will be DR Congo who will be facing Ghana in the early kickoff, and Ghana captain Asamoah Gyan, who risks being ruled out of the African Cup of Nations after suffering an injury in Wednesday's 1-0 defeat by Egypt, says DR Congo will be a tough side.
It's not going to be easy. We're playing against a tough side, DRC Congo. Very, very good team, you know, but as I said, we have to just focus on that game and go home, relax, and then go back to the drawing board and then we see what happens.
In the later game, it will be a North African derby in Port Gentil as Egypt will face Morocco. Egypt head coach Hector Cooper says AFCON is a competition everybody wants to win, but that they will stay focused in order to brighten up their chances.
We're going to do everything we can to win, knowing that it's not easy and that our rivals are tough, but we have the same spirit as the people. This is football, and you've got to just play the games, knowing that all your rivals want to win as well. That's the competition.
And as the 2017 AFCON gets into the knockout phase, let's take a quick look at the statistics from the group stage. A total of 52 goals were scored, which averages 2.1 goals per match. Having scored 6 goals, DR Congo, Senegal, and Tunisia are ranked as the best attacking teams. They are closely followed by Algeria with 5 goals, and then Burkina Faso, Morocco, and Zimbabwe are grouped third with 4 goals each. Having scored 3 goals, Cameroon is ranked the 4th best attacking team, while Cote d'Ivoire, Egypt, Gabon, Ghana, Guinea-Bissau and Togo are ranked the 5th attacking teams, having scored 2 goals. On the scorers chart, it will be Junior Kabananga of DR Congo with 3 goals who will be gunning for the Golden Boots, while Riyad Mahrez, Islam Slimani of Algeria, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang of Gabon, Sadio Mane of Senegal and Niam Sliti of Tunisia all have 2 goals. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria.
Voice of America.
Keep on sunny side, always on sunny side. Keep on sunny side of life. It'll help us every day. It'll brighten all our ways when we keep on sunny side of life.
There have been some noticeably empty seats in the stadiums at the Africa Cup of Nations in Gabon. Some say the population is heeding a call from the opposition to boycott the matches over last year's disputed election. But others blame the bad economy for low turnout. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Gabon's capital, Libreville.
Hundreds of secondary school students are lining up at the government high school in the center of Libreville to receive entry tickets for AFCON matches.
Pour servir en classe et puis demander
aux élèves qui veulent les billets.
16-year-old Yumbi Bertrand says their classmaster gives them tickets and sums ranging from $5 to $10 to go to the pitches to watch matches. A bus transports them to the stadium and then takes them home after. But despite the distribution of free tickets around the capital, the stands were not full for many of the matches in the group round. It's a contrast to the packed stadiums back in 2012 when Gabon co-hosted AFCON with Equatorial Guinea. This year, Gabon opposition leader Jean Ping urged people to boycott the event to protest last year's disputed presidential election. Martin Gupsu was deputy director of Ping's campaign. Gupsu says the boycott is being respected by Ping's supporters. He says people do not love President Ali Bongo and want him out and are using the tournament as a political weapon to show his unpopularity. Ping pushed for an independent recount of the vote. Allegations of fraud led to deadly protests in September when results were announced. Sociologist Abdurrahman Abba of the Omar Bongo University says poor turnout at AFCON may be more an indication of the continued level of political tension than support for the opposition.
En toutes circonstances, dans n'importe quel pays, lorsqu'il survient une crise, règne comme une atmosphère.
He says many people in Gabon are not ready to go to the stadiums for fear of the unknown. Some people, like football fan Narcis Mumba, prefer to watch the games on television at popular spots like Liberty Square.
If Ali Bongo was popular, Jiang Ping wouldn't have been able to convince the people to stay out from this game.
Ali Bongo is unpopular.
President Ali Bongo has not reacted to Ping's call for a boycott, but not everyone has responded kindly to the opposition's attempt to mix politics and football. Ndong Gabriel, a businessman in Libreville, has been going to the stadiums.
C'est par rapport au patriotisme. Je supporte non seulement parce que c'est d'abord la patrie.
He says he is going to the stadium as a sign of patriotism to his country that needs more visibility. He says he is also out to support Africa's football and its youth, who, for the most part, are more highly competitive than their peers on other continents. Some observers say the bad economy, not politics, is keeping fans at home. The global drop in oil prices since 2014 has hurt Gabon and reduced people's purchasing power. Some of the stadiums being used for AFCON matches are far from city centers, which only adds to the expense. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News. Libreville.
Voice of America.
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
Keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. It will help us every day. It will brighten all the way. It will keep on the sunny side of
I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Boxing news now on the Voice of America. World Boxing Association featherweight champion Carl Frampton from Northern Ireland takes on Mexican fighter Leo Santa Cruz Saturday night in a rematch of their Action Pack 2016 bout, widely regarded as one of the best fights of the year. Frampton and Santa Cruz will trade punches in Las Vegas, Nevada. 6 months ago in New York City, Frampton took Santa Cruz's title belt with a 12-round majority decision. First, let's hear from Carl Frampton.
I think that this fight, like the last one, I don't think it can be too much different. I think that our styles just gel well together. Leo is a tremendous fighter who I have the utmost respect for him and his team. He spoke a lot about family, and the both of us fight for our families, and that's really all the motivation you need.
Meanwhile, Leo Santa Cruz also sounds motivated.
For this fight, you know, I'm really prepared. You know, as you guys know, we had a great first fight. It was pretty tough. And I know this fight is going to be pretty tough, too. It's going to be pretty even. But, you know, we're going to work on little things that we work in the gym. We're going to be smarter, you know. But, like, I, as a Mexican fighter, you know, we all Mexican fighters like to fight, give the fans a great fight. And every time I step in the ring, I go out there and to try to please the fans. I go out there and brawl.
Leo Santa Cruz goes out there to brawl Saturday night with a record of 32 wins, the one loss to Frampton, and one draw. The champion Frampton is unbeaten with 23 consecutive victories and 14 knockouts. Elsewhere in the fight game, I asked our reigning prince of pugilistics, Namdi Hollywood Mueta, for an update on retired boxing champion Floyd Mayweather.
Sonny, Money Mayweather said he's done with boxing, but he's eyeing a situation where he's going to take on Conor McGregor, a mixed martial arts guy, and it's been a back and forth between these two guys. And from what we're looking at, and the fight fans are not really happy about it because they look at it as more like a circus act, but the kind of numbers they are throwing is really scary. Floyd Mayweather offered McGregor $25 million. And the promoter of McGregor offered Floyd Mayweather $25 million, and Mayweather laughed over it. Mayweather wants a guarantee of $100 million, Sonny.
Wow, wow.
So that's why we call him Money Mayweather. And there's a good chance, if they put all the numbers together, he will get that $100 million.
Namdi McGregor, definitely one of the biggest stars in mixed martial arts, but would he carry over that MMA audience to a boxing match with Mayweather?
Oh, yes, Sonny, because the MMA audience, they're big and they're used to pay-per-view. But the question becomes, will this audience of MMA be able to bring in the big dollars like we do in boxing? In boxing, Mayweather walked away with close to $300 million when he fought Manny Pacquiao. Will the money be there when he takes on Conor McGregor? Conor McGregor is not a boxer. He just got his boxing license in California a couple of weeks ago. The fight fans will just look at it as a joke and just walk away. And then at the end of it all, the numbers will not add up and nobody will make $100 million.
The Mexican star Canelo set to go up against the son of a great Mexican boxing champion. Tell us about that, Namdi.
This is all Mexican showdown. These are two Mexican warriors ready to make it happen. May 6th. The fight is signed, but no arena is confirmed. Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. against Canelo. These are two Mexican warriors, two big draws. It's an exciting fight.
What venues are we looking at for Canelo, Julio Cesar Chavez Jr.?
Two venues are in the running now. This fight will happen at a very important weekend, which is a Cinco de Mayo weekend for the Mexican people. We're looking at Dallas Cowboys Stadium, the AT&T Stadium that can hold 100,000. Or we're looking at T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas, which holds 17,000. But if you look at it the different ways, when they go to Las Vegas, the casinos love the people that will come to the table, and the casinos will clean up. So the city will make a lot of money, and the promoters will be happy. Dallas Cowboys Stadium, there's no casino for the boys to play. So the boys have to play over the weekend when they come for the fight. So we're looking more at a T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas. I can jump on the plane and be there in half an hour.
What about the pay-per-view numbers for this all-Mexican matchup?
The pay-per-view numbers will not be the kind of numbers we'll look at. If it's going to be Triple G against Canelo or Manny Pacquiao against Floyd Mayweather, the pay-per-view number will be decent, maybe between 700,000 to a million baht.
What weight class will they be fighting at, Namdi?
Interesting question, Sonny. They're contracted to fight at 164.5, almost 165 pounds, which means Canelo will put on 10 extra pounds to fight Julio Cesar Chavez. Circle back to why Canelo has been running away from Triple G. Because Canelo said, I cannot make 160. But you can make 164, 165 against Julio Cesar Chavez. Interesting fight. The Mexican fans are the number one boxing fans. Will they come out for this fight? We don't know.
You mennioned Triple G, Namdi. Is Gennady Golovkin still scheduled to fight here in the States?
Gennady Golovkin will take on Daniel Jacobs March 18th at Madison Square Garden. Daniel Jacobs is the second best middleweight in the world today, and there's a good chance he may expose Triple G, and we'll look at Triple G after that fight. If it's all banged up and bruised up, nobody will be talking about Canelo. It's a good fight, but we need to see what will happen. Madison Square Garden, March 18th. Triple G is in a very tough fight.
Namdi, do you think we're going to see Triple G and Canelo go at it in 2017?
Triple G and Canelo must go at it after Canelo and Julio Cesar Chavez. But don't write off Julio Cesar Chavez. Julio Cesar Chavez is a bigger and is a puncher. Go back and look at what he did to Sergio Martinez from Argentina. Julio Cesar Chavez, if he's in a good shape, because he's been known to come in out of shape, if he's in a good shape, he may even knock out Canelo. But if Canelo puts him away and Triple G puts away Jacobs, then the next big fight is Canelo against Triple G, and that's a fight we want to see.
Thanks, Namdi. That's our reigning prince of pugilistics, Namdi Hollywood Moeta. Joining us once again for a look at sports social media trends is my VOA colleague, Doug Bernard. Happy Friday, Doug.
Happy Sporty Friday. Greetings to you.
What's trending in the sports world, Doug?
Well, so many people on Instagram, on Facebook, on Twitter are excited about the final matches here in the 105th Australian Open. And as you and I were discussing, these matches are coming up this weekend. But as you and I were discussing before the program, there's already one winner and one loser. And that is, this time, experience seems to have clearly beaten out youth. So here we have, it's going to be Roger Federer versus Rafael Nadal, and then Venus Williams facing down her sister, Serena Williams. We spoke a little bit about the women's match, because that was set yesterday. Let's take a quick look at the men's match. Now, Federer and Nadal, if this sounds familiar, it's because these two have been playing each other in titled matches since 2004.
Wow.
Yeah,
wow.
A very long time ago. The rivalry, I think, clearly has gone on to become one of the classics in tennis history. I mean, it really... and it's not even over yet, which is fascinating to me. Anyway, they're the only pair of men who have ever finished four consecutive calendar years at the top. First, it was Federer, and then it was at the U.S. Open in 2008 that Nadal finally beat Federer in one of the Grand Slam matches, and Nadal then, for a period of time, sort of rose. We saw some new players coming in, some churn in the men's singles. But, you know, look, these two have faced each other consistently. It's always very different styles of tennis. You know, Nadal is, I mean, just looking at the two of them, you know, you can tell that they're just sort of constructed differently. And they have very different styles of tennis, which just, I think, makes it so much fun to watch them go at each other. So the couple quick last facts. They've faced each other 34 times. Nadal leads the head-to-head series 23-11 overall and 9-2 in Grand Slam tournaments. But you know, again, I'm going to point out, Federer has not been the Federer of old of late. He has struggled over the past year or so. He's had knee issues. He even had some issues in the semifinals and in Melbourne this week. He had to go off the court for a little bit, and they were doing some, you know, some of the physio stuff that they do. I don't know all what they do. Anyway, that's set to be a great match. And, of course, the Williams sisters are going to be facing each other. They've met 27 times before. People on Twitter just cannot wait. I think many of them are right. This could potentially be a huge ratings sweep. I mean, what is there not to like in these two matches?
All four players, great players, and yet I think if you were to lay down some odds, Doug, before the tournament started, I don't think too many people saw this scenario.
No, I don't think that people really saw Venus, kind of rising to where she did. She's still obviously one of the top-notched players, but she is at the, what do they call the, the kind of the comeback kid story, I think, of this potentially, of this series. And a lot of people really thought that, Nadal, Federer, we've seen it, we've been there. Each of the players are maturing a little bit, so we're not going to see it. Three of the four of them are 35 or older. Nadal's the youngster at 30. So I thought I'd look this up. I thought I'd throw out this fast fact. The age of eligibility on the tennis seniors tour is 35. So three or four of them now qualify for the seniors tour.
And I think you mentioned the fact yesterday that Federer is the oldest male finalist since Ken Rosewall back in 1974.
Great memory.
Rosewall, I think, was 39 when he played at that tournament.
That's exactly right. Good memory.
But, Venus and Roger Federer, just two great stories at this Australian Open.
Yeah. And so I think people are, I think this is one of those times, there's no villains here. I think people, whoever your favorite, whoever you might be rooting for, these are four class players. And, whoever wins, whoever loses, I think, we're in store for good tennis. I know that. But there are no villains in this time around.
What else is trending in the sports world, Doug?
Well, there's one story that I noticed, first reported on Twitter. I won't say that it's trending. Very quickly, the BBC is now reporting that a task force has been set up to examine the credibility of records set in European athletic competitions. Now, of course, this is all following last summer's doping scandal. Some, 1,000 Russian athletes, I think, were banned from competing. There were the problems with the Olympics. Even Usain Bolt lost an Olympic medal.
Just this week.
A real shocker. Hasn't really been floated around there. But they say they're going back. The task force is going back literally as far as the 80s. This is the time during the Cold War when, if you recall, East Germany was rumored to have a very extensive doping program. They say they're going to have the report out by September. I don't know how they're going to do that. But that's a news item that is trending. And one final item. A fun item that is trending, it's getting a lot of sass, I think, on Twitter. It's appropriate for the topic. So you're, of course, familiar with Stanford University, right? One of the nation's most prestigious universities, impeccable reputation, long-standing connections to Silicon Valley, all that kind of thing. Located near San Francisco. Basically, right in the backyard of Stanford University is where the Silicon and IT revolution began back in the 70s, and they certainly helped nurture it. Well, one of the things Stanford, I think a lot of leaders there wish they weren't known for, is the Stanford Marching Band. I don't know if you've ever seen them. Technically, they're known as the Leland Stanford Junior University Marching Band, the LSJUMB. And what it's really known for, it's called a scatter band. And what it's known for are these anarchic performances that they put on. They just all kind of mob onto the field. There are no formations. They're also, they're very controversial. They have a habit of insulting visiting teams. The mascot, which is the Stanford tree, is consistently rated the worst in the United States. Anyway, it's rumored that a lot of officials at Stanford have been trying to get rid of the band. It was placed on probation. They were almost facing this week sort of this long-term probation, which would have killed it. But the university provost relented. He lifts the bands, so the band is ready to all sort of take the field in their glorious disorder again. And if you've never seen them, I recommend them. Just go to YouTube. Look him up.
Scatter on. Scatter on. Thanks, Doug.
Thank you.
VOA's Doug Bernard. And that wraps up the January 27th edition of The Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to my producer, Kwame Ofori. Thanks also to VOA engineer, Nelson Lopes. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Have a nice weekend, everyone. And that's the sunny side of sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
After 22 years of autocratic rule under former President Yahya Jammeh, the Gambia has a new president, Adama Barrow. President Barrow's inauguration took place on January 18th at the Gambian embassy in Dakar, Senegal, due to concerns about his safety in Gambia. After initially accepting his electoral defeat in early December, Mr. Jammeh suddenly changed course, refusing to step down. He then attempted to challenge the election results in court, and when that failed, declared a state of emergency. The Economic Community of West African States, or ECOWAS, immediately condemned the attempt by Jammeh to cling to power. Following weeks of high-level engagement by ECOWAS and other regional heads of state, the group underlined their commitment to Gambian democracy by organizing a multinational mission to enforce Gambia's electoral results should Mr. Jammeh continue to refuse to hand over power. Following the stationing of these forces on the Gambian border and intense last-minute mediation by regional leaders, Mr. Jammeh finally agreed to depart peacefully on January 21st. This has paved the way for President Barrow to return to the Gambia imminently. The United States welcomes the ongoing peaceful transition of power in the Gambia and congratulates President Barrow on his inauguration. Mr. Jammeh took office in 1994 after a coup and imprisoned numerous journalists and political opponents during his tenure. President Barrow has vowed to release all political prisoners and to get to work on improving the Gambia's economy. The United States applauds the commitment to democracy and the restraint shown by the Gambian people over the past weeks and appreciates the decision by Mr. Jammeh to depart peacefully. The United States commends the Economic Community of West African States and other regional partners for their leadership in addressing the situation. The United States echoes President Barrow's call for Gambians to unite and work together as brothers and sisters for the future of the Gambia. The United States is proud of our close ties to the people of the Gambia and looks forward to working closely with President Barrow and his team to achieve the aspirations of all Gambians.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. VOAnews.com.
This is Shauna Renee, the lady DJ and host of Soul Lounge. Every Sunday at 1400 UTC, I choose an artist that you and I love, and we break down their entire career while listening to their biggest hits. That's what we do here on the Soul Lounge. Once again, every Sunday, 1400 UTC, right here.
Are you wandering around lost in a musical desert? Well, follow your ears to the fantastic, the one and only African music mix on The Voice of America. Bathe yourself in this musical oasis. From the north to the south and from the east to the west, the African music mix plays only the best.
Yes, sir. Two Face, NATO C. Hey.
Tune in at 200, 300, 1200, and 1300 UTC GMT. Every day, right here on VOA Africa.
VOAAfrica.com.
News, features, music from Africa and around the world. You want it? We have it on VOAAfrica.com.
VOAAfrica.com.
All day, all night.